Well, we're going to straighten that out now, but let's just start by asking you, you've been a facilitator for dental practice transitions, and what exactly does that mean, and what are the implications of that?
Well, since I started my consulting business, I have seen a lot of bad partnerships and a lot of poorly designed practice sales where I would get called in after the fact and hired to try and rectify the situation. I started to see some patterns in all of this, and I knew that there had to be a better way to do this. So I developed a strategy that's based on the premise that there really can't be a winner and a loser in these kinds of negotiations, just two winners. So I act as an intermediary or a facilitator between the buyer and the seller, essentially representing both sides and having to be able to defend and justify every position from both sides in order to arrive at a fair resolution. And this is much different from having lawyers on both sides of the table trying to win for their client. This becomes very expensive and often turns into something that's very confrontational. So one thing is very important to understand, Rich. I do not act as a broker. I don't earn a commission. I just charge an hourly fee for my time. And it's truly what I call an arm's length transaction, which means that I don't have any skin in the game. It allows me to be totally objective. A broker only gets paid if the transaction or the sale occurs. So it's harder for the broker to be objective. I mean, that's just human nature. Also, without a broker, the seller saves big time because he or she is not going to be paying the 6 to 10% of the selling price as a commission.
So I kind of get the vibe. Maybe you're being too nice to say this, but a broker that's being paid by a percentage, maybe the tendency would be, well, if somebody's not getting the best deal in the world, but they think they can close the deal, they're going to go ahead and do it because that's how they get their commission, and they better grab it while they can. Whereas you're an advisor to both sides, and you don't, you know, you have no dog in the fight, as you said.
Yeah, I mean, I really feel that brokers are ethical. I mean, I've dealt with lots of brokers over the years, and I'm not saying that they're not ethical. I'm just saying that for them, they're like a used car salesman. I mean, once they make the sale, they're on to the next one, and then they're on to the next one. So they spend a lot of time trying to introduce buyers to sellers, you know, like a realtor showing a house. You keep doing it, and you put a lot of time in. You don't get paid for anything until a sale actually occurs. So, you know, if you say to me, you know, is a broker necessary today, I'd really have to say that many times the simple answer is no, that you really don't need a broker. And that's because the supply and demand equation is definitely on the seller's side these days. And that is being reflected in the asking prices that I'm seeing. More doctors are practicing longer than they ever imagined because they can't afford to retire. If they stay working, they're making a nice living and they can live at a certain lifestyle. But if they retire, if they sell their practice, they're not going to be able to maintain that lifestyle. You know, in the first 10 years of the 21st century, there have been two stock market crashes that really have hurt the retirement portfolios of a lot of docs. So they have to work longer, hence there's not as many practices for sale. And because of this, practice valuations are definitely higher than they were 10 to 15 years ago. Many younger doctors who are justifiably fearful of starting a practice from scratch with no patients are looking to purchase an existing practice. They don't want to be an associate forever. Well, I'm telling you, you can put an ad on Craigslist. I'm always amazed at the power of Craigslist. And you'll find a ton of doctors looking to buy. So you're able to find buyers, you know, as long as you're willing to put in a little bit of work. And that being said, brokers are still around. They are still providing a good service, and they still remain active. But I would tell you that times have definitely changed.
I got to tell you, I'm amazed that you can find a dental practice for sale on Craigslist.
Well, you go take a look. You know, you type in the Craigslist search bar, in the location that you're looking for, dental practice, I think you'd be surprised.
Well, you can be sure I'm going to do this as soon as this interview is over. I can't wait to see that. It's Absolutely. Actually kind of funny, but so again, you know, you said brokers are ethical; they do a good service, and I firmly believe that too. But without a broker, how do you know if you're getting and you know, maybe without an attorney, how do you know you're getting a good deal? How do you know you're not getting ripped off? How do you know what protocols to follow?
Well, I mean, I don't think that it's you know, setting the value of a dental practice isn't really all that difficult. I mean, there's comparables that you can actually find that are matters of public record if you were thinking that it wasn't. But, you know, somebody like myself, if I'm involved in this, I'm pretty easily able to be able to set a value so that, you know, that both, which has to be justified from both sides, as to is it affordable for the buyer and is it a good deal for the seller?
That does make sense. And as you said before, it should be a win-win, not a win-lose or a lose-lose. So
that's correct. That's correct.
So kind of like, and I can't think of the term. I don't know why, but even if a couple gets divorced, they don't necessarily need two attorneys. They can go to a, what's the name of the person they go to?
Yeah, sort of a mediator.
A mediator, that's it.
Yeah.
As I get old, I can't find these words anymore. I don't know. So yeah, I guess it makes sense that if there's somebody who's knowledgeable. And,
you know, Rich, it's called being noun challenged. I just saw that. That's a sort of a, you know, a very soft way of describing what's happening to all of us.
Very funny. I'm a little noun challenged today. But it does make sense that if there's somebody who's knowledgeable and can truly be independently looking out for the best interests of all parties, that it can work. And then you do save on the commission too, which is a bonus.
I agree.
All right, well, hey, it's not as simple as, you know, buying and selling. There are a bunch of different kinds of transitions, some more complex than others. So why don't we talk about the different kinds of transitions that you've seen in your experience as, you know, overseeing all these practice transitions?
Okay, well, I think the easiest practice transition to start a discussion is an outright sale. In other words, the seller sells and the buyer buys. There's no partnership there. It's an outright sale. The legal documentation is a lot simpler than a partnership. It's basically a purchase and a sale and the seller signing a covenant not to compete. And the success of this transition is predicated on the ability of the seller to transfer the goodwill to the buyer. So what I've put together, and again, we can just sort of bullet point these in, and I'll try to be able to get through them quickly. In my experience, I'd like to be able to list 10 common pitfalls to avoid in this kind of a transition. So let me go down through them, and I won't take too much time, okay? So the first one is arguing about the price. In other words, the buyer is saying to the seller, gee, I don't know, this seems like a lot of money. I don't think it's really that difficult to calculate a fair price, and as long as that price is reasonable, I never advise my clients to try to beat up the seller on the price. I want the seller to be happy so that he or she can enthusiastically transfer the goodwill, because that is really what you're paying for. Second thing is for the buyer and the seller to understand the allocation of goodwill for tax purposes. This has to be agreed on before the pricing, because the after-tax ramifications of that would affect what the seller would be receiving. Typically, 75 to 80% of the sale price is attributed to goodwill. And this is a favorable situation for the seller, who pays a capital gains tax, which currently is 15%. The balance of the sales price is taxed as ordinary income. To the buyer, it really is not as significant as it is to the seller. The third thing that I find is a problem is a failure to retain key staff members when a practice transition like this takes place. My motto is, it is okay to change doctors. It is not okay to change staff.